Thanks, everyone. I'm Bruce Perrins. I bring you greetings from the hundreds of thousands of open source software developers around the world. We embody many of the goals of the United Nations. We are a community without borders, a global network that shares knowledge, a social movement that produces real products available equally to the rich or poor, an economic reality that has engaged the world's largest companies and talented individuals in a collaboration of equals. Our work facilitates global e-inclusion and a sustainable infrastructure for technology and innovation in developing nations. Millions of people use our software to create global markets for local business through the internet. We create wealth for all. Our work, Biometrics for Conventional Software Creation, is valued in the billions of dollars. For our reward, we ask only that you use our software. If you find it effective, perhaps you will join us in augmenting it. Others offer developing nations charity and a relationship as vassals, captive markets and providers of labor at a salary the developed world would not accept. Open source offers developing nations technological empowerment, control of their own infrastructure, and an equal technological partnership with developed nations. I am honored to follow Dr. Richard Stallman, the giant upon whose shoulders open source stands. When I say open, we don't agree about everything, but I love Richard. Anyway, when I say open source, when I say open source, I mean the same thing that Richard means when he says free software. Nothing in my talk should be taken as a diminishment of his. There has been factionalism, but only because of personalities that no longer matter. When we first started to explain open source, it was a social phenomenon of individuals. Today, large companies like IBM and Merrill Lynch invest millions into open source development. But how can we possibly support ourselves by giving away our software? To answer that question, I'll give you a quick introduction to the economics of open source. For most businesses, software is an enabling technology rather than their product. For example, Amazon.com sells books but uses a web server to reach their customers. It doesn't matter to Amazon that the web serving software doesn't sell for a profit. Its function is to help sell books, and they are happy to invest in their software cost centers to enable their book selling profit center. Software-intensive businesses have two kinds of software, only two. Differentiating software, software that makes their business look better than their competitor's business, and non-differentiating software. Non-differentiating software is essential to operate the business, but doesn't make their store significantly more attractive to their customers. For example, the recommendation software of Amazon.com, which suggests books that customers with similar interests have purchased, makes their web store different from that of other booksellers. Obviously, Amazon must have total ownership of that software so that they can keep it from falling into the hands of their competitors, or their business differentiation would be reduced. But Amazon's customers don't care whether Amazon uses Microsoft Word or OpenOffice to write letters. The people within Amazon.com may care very much, but that's not visible to the customer, and thus that's non-differentiating software. The first key intuition that you need about open source economics is that 95% or more of the software in your business, whatever it is non-differentiating. Both open source and Microsoft produce only non-differentiating software, simply because anyone can buy or get a copy. If everyone can have it, it won't be differentiating. Differentiating software is developed by programmers who are employed by or under contract to the company that will use it. Because that company must have complete control over who is allowed to run their differentiating software, that company must bear the entire cost and risk of its development. That's how that kind of software must be paid for, all by one company or even by one person in some cases. Non-differentiating software is different. It's developed by retail manufacturers like Microsoft or by open source and free software. Retail manufacturers invest a large amount of money in software development and must finish developing their product before they can make their first profit. They use the stock market to distribute cost and risk of that development. And then, eventually, retail sales redistribute the cost and, if they're lucky, allow the investors to take profit. But only a small minority of software can ever be profitable. In contrast, open source developers release software as soon as it becomes useful to others, much earlier than a retail manufacturer would. At that point, individuals or other companies start using the software. If it's useful to them, they can contribute their own work to its further development or pay other developers to add new features. Because there can be many partners, development of open source software proceeds at a very rapid pace after it is first distributed. Because the work of development is shared among those partners, the cost and risk of development is shared, and no one has to bear the entire cost alone. Last year, Microsoft, a leading retail software manufacturer, spent between 14 and 16% of their total revenue on all research and development. Less than 16%. This is a high for that industry. When we add the overheads of the sales pipeline, retailers and wholesalers, it's easy to show that customers get less than 5 cents of software development for every dollar they spend on software. Obviously, this sort of software requires a huge mass market before it can be reasonably priced. Because open source does not bear the heavy costs that retail manufacturers pay to find customers, the costs of advertising, creating glossy boxes that we throw out as soon as we get to the office, and the revenue taken by the wholesale and retail sales pipeline, because open source doesn't have those costs, we are able to put much more money into development and much less into unproductive overheads. When you spend on open source development, at least 50 cents of your software dollar actually pay for development. What do companies do with the money they save on those overheads? It's not lost from the economy. They put it into other projects that are important to them. Retail manufacturers can only develop software that will have a big enough market to make a profit after it's been created, and it must be demonstrable to investors that the resulting software can generate income. In contrast, open source can develop any software, regardless of its ability to make a profit. For this reason, commercial companies were not able to develop the web. Where did the web come from? Well, a commercial concern, Ted Nelson's Xanadu project, tried to develop it. They had investment from Autodesk Corporation. They tried to create the web for over a decade. They failed because they had to make a way to monetize the web, and the only way they could think of was awkward, and they could not implement it in time. So what happened? An open source project led by Tim Berners-Lee, today Sir Tim for creation of the web, an open source project made the World Wide Web, released it for everyone, including Microsoft and Netscape, the first early commercializers of the browser, to develop on top of their software. And so the web was created by publicly funded open source, which is what must happen when no one understands where the idea will go and thus no one will pay for it. Web development was continued by non-public funded projects like the Apache web server development. Tim didn't implement a specific way for people to make money from the web. He expected that website operators would create many different ways of making income on their own. When the technology is speculative, when there's no assurance of a market, it's often the case that investors can't be interested. Only open source will work for this sort of project. So, I've told you about a great way to develop software. It's a way to provide infrastructure for all pursuits worldwide. But what about innovation? Obviously, innovation is critically important to make the world that we will live in tomorrow. During the 1990s, open source didn't do all that much innovation compared to today. Open source was catching up with technology that had already been developed in the proprietary software world. But we insisted that our infrastructure be free, and so we wrote our own. Now that we've caught up, open source is demonstrating tremendous innovation in many fields. For example, many businesses use Java software for their websites. While Java started out as the child of a single company, today, that development paradigm has been replaced. All of the most innovative projects in the Java world are open source projects. Only the Linux operating system kernel is used in both phones. What? It's a kernel. I'd say GNU Linux if it was a whole operating system. I got you, Richard. So anyway, only the Linux operating system kernel, a single open source project out of many thousands, has reached a development change rate of 750,000 lines of software per month. No single company, no matter how large, could match that pace. And many of the new features that have been announced for Microsoft Internet Explorer are ones that were pioneered in the open source Firefox web browser. Today, open source has become the leader in software innovation. Our innovations are not only technological ones. We have innovated in social and legal aspects. For example, Dr. Stallman's GNU General Public License is the schematic for the partnership of the Linux operating system kernel development. No other system could hold together such a large partnership of companies, individuals, and institutions with different interests. Only the GPL, Dr. Stallman's creation, creates the fair partnership that can hold them together. And our other innovation in social space is the tremendous distributed development that we carry out. No company, no consortium has tried to do distributed development even 1% as large as that carried out by the open source community. And when it's done, all put together into a single system. So we bring you many innovations. For all of our powerful software, we grant rights, the rights that come with software freedom that proprietary business models can't provide. And it's not only Libre, it's gratis too. We ask a price of $0. You can pay more. Many people are happy to take your money. But an excellent system containing more than 15,000 ready-to-run open source programs is made available without charge by the nonprofit Debian organization, a global partnership of 1,000 volunteer developers who are combining all of the open source work done by the larger community into a single system, put in the DVD, and it installs itself and is immediately useful. That system can fulfill most of the software needs in developing nations. It is the basis of Mr. Shuttleworth's Ubuntu project. Because of the rights granted with open source, service and support are something that you can get from local people in a competitive market. Developing nations are building their own technical expertise based on open source and will be able to support themselves rather than live upon the sufferance of proprietary software manufacturers in developed nations. But they will never be alone. Today, most open source development goes on in developed nations, and thus today, the developed nations are subsidizing less developed ones with excellent free software. As developing nations bootstrap their own technical infrastructure with open source, they will become more equal partners in its development, but nothing will ever compel them to take on more than their fair share of the load. But there's bad news on the horizon. Obviously, there are companies that will profit most if the world remains divided into a few powerful software haves and a globe full of have-nots who must live upon their sufferance. The software plutocracy has attempted to draw more borders around knowledge that would destroy open source and free software using software patents. The patent system grants monopolies for things that aren't legitimate inventions, and because of the high legal costs involved, it grants justice only to the rich. The news for open source is much worse than large patent-holding entities like IBM would tell you. Software patent holders have the ability to entirely destroy open source, and they will do so if you don't stop them. They will stop our developers with lawsuits intended to restrain those developers rather than to generate fees for damages. Those lawsuits will be brought on behalf of software patents on things that are not inventions, that are trivial, or that embody prior art. In other words, they are things that were invented before, or they are applications of pure mathematics, a field that is discovered, not invented. The software patent holders have so far held off from attacking open source until they can get more nations to pass software patent laws. Moving against us now would only raise more objections to their political campaign. But the time will come. We fought their camp off successfully in Europe last year, but they've already started a new offensive, and now they are using ineffective patent pools to deceive legislators that the problem is solved for open source and that laws supporting software patenting can now go ahead in Europe and elsewhere. It's a lie. The people behind the patent pools are either naive or admitting that they won't solve the problem, or they're out to deceive you. So far, it appears that the OSDL pool admits they won't solve the problem, and there's something else called Open Innovation Network, which is made up of companies like Sony that, as far as I can tell, don't have very much love for open source. So why are they participating? I believe their intention is to make the world safe for software patenting, not for open source. There's no benefit to going ahead with software patenting in more nations. Yet, the United Nations and governments are caught up in an ever-increasing spiral of laws and treaties mandating protection that actually deters innovation except for the very largest of companies, because only the very largest of companies are cross-licensed with each other and have patent portfolios large enough that they can intimidate any smaller company, any individual, any organization from competing with them. They can make those organizations license their patents to the big guy for free without reciprocating. And they are the only voice that is being heard from in legal forums. Governments make the situation even worse through inaction. Although filing for patent monopolies on non-inventions is a rampant practice, no cases are known in which the filer of a false patent has been charged with perjury. No one goes to jail for these crimes, and they are granted legal monopolies that they then use against the rest of the world. The United Nations should lead the call to balance patent law to benefit entire economies rather than the few at the top. Efforts like an access to knowledge treaty and a new WIPO reevaluation office would be a good way to start. Patent laws must be reformed to support rather than deter innovation and to provide equal justice to all. The effects of patent law must be scientifically monitored. Software patenting legislation should be decoupled from the laws that support the pharmaceutical industry with drug patents, because the pharmaceutical industry is so large and has bought up so many politicians that they are a mountain the software industry should not have to move in order to get progress. We must decouple software patenting from pharmaceutical patenting. Today, open source is a leader in sharing knowledge to everyone's benefit. We offer one of the most effective methods yet tried to achieve the goals of this summit. Please do not allow abuses of law to undo the progress we have made. We ask the United Nations to take the lead in helping to unite the world in a productive open source partnership that helps liberate the poor and increases the freedom, knowledge, and well-being of every person. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bruce. We're now going to hear reactions and responses briefly. For most panelists, 5 minutes, I'm going to give Robert Kramer of CompTIA, which is a DC-based trade association, a little bit extra time to respond to it because it'll balance things out a bit.